Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Mindcast, Healthy Mind, Healthy Child, a podcast from the children's mental health experts at Bradley Hospital. I'm Dr. Greg Frutz.
And I'm Dr. Tanuja Gandhi. Today, we are tackling a tough but important topic. It's gun violence. We know that gun violence can take many forms, from mass shootings to accidents and even suicides using firearms. But today, we're focusing specifically on school shootings, which have unfortunately become a reality. From Columbine in 1999 up to the present day, it's one of the most unfortunate things that happens in relation to firearms.
Yeah, it's a difficult topic, but it's crucial. I mean, we have to help our kids and communities feel safe and supported. So today we'll talk about how to have these conversations about school shootings with kids, and the importance of self-care, and then some things we can do to prepare. And we're thrilled to have Dr. Marge Passione, Director of Clinical Innovation here at Bradley, to talk to us on this topic. Marge has joined us in the past once before, and it's great to have you back, Marge.
Thanks, Greg. It's a really difficult topic, but it's great to be back.
Thank you, Marge, for joining us. When I think about the best way to talk about this topic with kids and families, I admit it's scary and quite overwhelming. And this feeling of being overwhelmed is true for both children and adults. But these conversations don't have to be. That's how I feel with all the clinical work we've been doing for many years now. There are ways to approach it in ways that kids can feel heard and reassured and not be scared about talking about the topic.
Yeah, that's true. First off, let's recognize that it's important to plan the conversation. We're just not going to wing it. First off, it's important to plan the conversation. We aren't just going to be winging this serious discussion. So think about what you want to say and be prepared to ask questions and then answer them, of course. You're not just raising them. But tell us, Marge, what should adults keep in mind when we're preparing to talk to kids about such a sensitive topic?
So just for some context, there have been over 100 active shooter incidents reported at K-12 schools in the United States since the shooting at Columbine in 1999. So names such as Sandy Hook, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, Robb Elementary in Uvalde, or Appalachia High School, to name a few, are well known to our kids. So any thought of hiding this information from our kids is unrealistic. So the best thing that we can do is have open, honest, and age-appropriate discussions on the topic. Firstly, as adults, it's important to understand the stress or worry that you're feeling around the issue. Children can sense when adults are nervous or anxious, and their feelings often mirror the feelings of their trusted adults. That doesn't mean you have to hide your feelings. It's fine to let your kids know how you're feeling and that you're finding ways to handle your concerns. Discuss your feelings and model your successful ways of coping. Secondly, take time to think about what you want to say and find a quiet place to talk. This is not a good conversation to have when the Patriots are in the red zone, for example.
Uh-huh.
Remember, if you talk calmly and confidently, it will be reassuring to your child. And next, open the topic and listen to what your child is presenting. Not everything that your child knows about gun violence from friends or social media is accurate. Understanding what worries your child can help you to address their concerns. Establish the facts and move forward, hopefully, to be talking about your feelings. Give your child lots of space to ask questions. Be truthful as you respond and be confident. It's okay not to know everything in the moment. Let your child know that you can learn more later and get back to them. Remember, keep the conversation age appropriate.
That's such a good point. So what we're hearing is that there are ways to break down the conversation to meet the age and developmental need of the child, right? So for younger kids, you might say something like, schools are working really hard to keep everyone safe, and there are grown-ups and trusted adults in school who can protect you. And that could be the teachers, the guidance counselors, depending on the school and their environment. And with older kids, it might be more of a discussion as to where they get to share their concerns and ask questions. Does that sound about right?
That's right on the money. So for the early elementary school kids, the real small ones, brief and simple information can be balanced with lots of reassurances that their schools are safe. Let them know that lots of adults, like their principals, teachers, school safety officer, community leaders, they're all there working very hard to keep them safe. So for that age group, reassurance is really, really important. Older elementary or middle school kids may be more vocal in asking questions about whether they are truly safe or what's being done at their school. Help me understand. Who's protecting me? They may need assistance separating reality from fantasy. Not every school in Rhode Island doesn't have sharpshooters on the roofs or anything else that these kids come up with. But yes, there really are safety plans in place, and they're there to keep everyone safe. And then the older kids, now we're into upper middle school or high school kids, will likely have strong opinions about the causes of violence. They may have concrete suggestions about how to make their schools safer. Listen to the kids, listen to what is being presented, and emphasize that adults are responsible for keeping everyone safe. Their job as kids is to follow school safety guidelines about providing building access to strangers and reporting safety concerns. You're going to hear this many times today. If you see something, say something.
So let's think a little bit more about this reassurance part. It's natural for kids to feel scared and confused by this, and yet it's possible for them to be overly scared and overly concerned about the thing. So we want them to know they're safe and supported, but how do we walk that thin line of reassurance and yet being realistic about it?
Yeah, great point. So reinforcing safety is essential, and emphasizing all the measures that schools put in place to protect kids is important. Remember, there are security officers and there are safety procedures. An important piece of the puzzle is during incidents or following recent shootings, limit kids' exposure to news and social media, because that could just increase kids' worry or anxiety. And I guess most importantly, help your child identify, you were there before, one adult at school and in the community that they can trust, to whom they can go if they feel unsafe or if they feel worried about something.
Also, if we're able to, I think it's like with older kids, I think these are uncommon events, even though they're in the news all mm-hmm. the time.
And
yeah. sometimes you get the feeling that it's going to happen tomorrow in my school or something like that, which is very, very unlikely. It seems to me that we need to share that as well, but not so much to say that their fears aren't grounded. You can get hit by lightning, too.
Sure. That's a hard line to walk, right?
Yeah.
Yes,
but it's
those
important.
Things that occur.
I think it's too fine for little kids to differentiate how frequent it is.
Yeah, those incidents that occur, they're real. Those shootings happened. People got hurt. However, it is exceedingly rare when you put it into the larger picture, right?
And from my understanding of the literature around children who've been involved in school shootings or children who have been a part of the violence, is that most of the times there were some indications or signs that came before that they were struggling. So I think as much as these incidents are rare, as professionals in child psychiatry or as people who are working in this field of children's mental health, for us, the important question of the day is, how do you talk to children about a very important, uncomfortable, and scary topic, and also identify signs that your child might be struggling, be it because someone else had these thoughts, be it because they saw a school shooting-related incident or someone else talked about it, or even if they're having these thoughts themselves. So the next question then is, what about the signs that a child might be struggling? What kind of signs should parents look for? How should they pick them? And what should they do if they're concerned?
For sure. Observe your child's reactions. Some kids may express their concerns verbally. Others may talk less. But you may observe changes in sleep patterns or appetite. A child may be eating more, maybe eating less. Be alert for changes in behavior. The real little kids, bedwetting, for example. Older kids, aggressiveness or withdrawal from friends and usual activities. Most kids will come around with support and reassurance. But if your concerns continue, reach out to your primary care, your pediatrician, or your mental health provider.
Let's now think about something you brought up in the beginning, that the idea that kids resonate so much with how their parents are feeling and doing. And I don't think we care enough or pay enough attention to adult self-care in relation to these school shootings. Kids pick up on the emotions of the adults around them, as you pointed out, and so it's essential that we take care of ourselves first. So could you say a little more about that?
Sure thing. This whole unfortunate topic is stressful. Adults need to stay closely connected to their support system. Friends, family members, other parents they may know through school events or faith-based communities. Stay in contact. Talk often about how they feel, what they think, especially when their kids are not present. Let this be an adult safe space.
So, in summary, we're talking about identifying signs that the kid might be struggling and also identifying the needs that adults have for their own space to talk about difficult topics and for reassurance. That totally makes sense. And the big point here is we don't have to do it alone. In situations like this, whether it's friends, family, co-workers, or faith communities, talking with others helps us manage our own emotions and sometimes look at the bigger picture, right? Because we've talked about how these incidents can be rare, but when you're in that situation, it's very scary. And the idea that it's one of those big events that might happen overwhelms people a lot. So having your own support system is so important.
Sure. Tanuja, have we ever met a parent that doesn't worry about their child's safety, doesn't give kind of a second thought these days when a child goes off to school? So there's a lot of stress here.
Yeah.
Exactly. And for those who might need more support, there are a lot of options to think about. There's the employee assistant programs, there's therapists of various types. It's completely normal to need some extra help, and parents taking care of themselves models what we want the children to do, which is to turn to people that can be helpful to them when they're having a difficult time. So let's move on to our last segment, thinking about areas of preparation. Schools often hold active shooter drills to prepare students and staff for emergencies. Think about that, Marge. Maybe you can share your thoughts on the pros and cons of these drills and ways to make them not so traumatic as to be almost like the real thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, the cards are still out on whether active shooter drills are more harmful than helpful. The research is very mixed on that issue. So thinking about it logically, each time a kid runs and hides from an active shooter in a drill, likely some harm results. That kid is internalizing that situation, and I can't imagine it feels so good. Recently here in Rhode Island, following a period of study, a bill was proposed to reduce and limit the number of emergency drills required in schools. I think that's a trend we're seeing in many places across the United States right now. There are other ways to keep kids safe that don't include active shooter drills. Educating parents and families about safe gun storage, for example. Utilizing evidence-based school-wide approaches to promote social-emotional learning and mental wellness. The healthier these kids are, the less likely they will be to resort to violence. And other kids will be more likely to recognize and speak up when there's something to be concerned about. Supporting legislation and regulations for gun safety and violence prevention is another important way to keep everyone safe. So I was thinking about recently as part of the Rhode Island Civic Leadership Program. This is a program that's sponsored by the Rhode Island Secretary of State. The kids were divided into two groups and they had a debate. And the debate was centered around assault gun bans. And it was really good. The kids were all lively and into it. And at the end, they got to vote and every single kid voted to ban assault rifles. My takeaway is we can have conversations about these topics in a very productive way. My other takeaway is kids are scared and worried and concerned.
One of my strong memories from my school days, and this was many decades ago, I won't say how many, but it was long enough that it was in the Cold War era, and we had bomb drills.
For sure.
And I still remember, I can picture it like it happened yesterday. It's very traumatic. I mean, I coped with it. I survived. But to be thinking 50 years later, remembering these things, we don't realize sometimes how scary that can be and how we need to balance. There has to be a lot of benefit to do that with children who are so vulnerable, I think.
Greg, I was right there with you. I was one of those kids during those days hiding under the desk, remember?
Yeah.
And that was going to protect from an atomic bomb. I mean, it was...
Right. Any kid knows that that's ridiculous.
Yep.
Put your hands behind your neck.
Remember it all.
Give me a break.
But we remember it. How many years later? I mean, we're 29 now and we remember it way back then.
Right.
But
I'm
amazing.
Also imagining that at that time, that was assumed as a strategy that would be helpful.
Absolutely.
You get to scare 10 times, but if your life gets saved once, it's kind of worth it.
Absolutely.
And that's probably the logic around getting these, I was going to say fire safety, pretty much the same idea that to have gun safety drills saying, you're going to be afraid. You have to do this thing that we really don't want anyone to have to go through. But if a rare unfortunate incident does happen, that might be the one practice that saved your life. But I hear you. We've got to value the risks and benefits of doing drills just like everything else. I wanted to also hone in on another point that you made, and mm-hmm. I focused on the conversation. You talked a lot about safe gun storage, advocacy, and how parents can be responsible partners in this conversation. It just doesn't have to be clinicians, policymakers, lawmakers. And you did not talk about gun ownership. And I wanted to hone in on that because for our listeners, that's such an important point because we're not talking about gun ownership. We are talking about keeping firearms safe when you have children in the home, to prevent unfortunate incidents from happening, because children might not know what to do if they see one. And definitely, children being children don't have the same kind of risk assessment capacities and the capacity to think through difficult, risky situations the way adults do. I mean, that's by definition being a child.
Totally. The last major school shooting we had in this country, the child was 14 years old, the shooter. And where did the gun come from? So adults need to take responsibility for being partners in this
in
whole
safety.
Effort, for sure, mm-hmm. for sure. You know what? There's one other group that we haven't talked about, and those are the kids that have witnessed school shootings. And what the research shows is that years and years later, these kids are underperforming in school, have higher rates of dropping out from school, have lower rates of college attendance, have higher rates of health issues. I mean, it sounds logical that that could be true, but we actually have the evidence to show that the kids witnessing these situations are forever changed.
That makes total sense, and it's so true. So going back to the point where I think I digressed from was the drills that we're talking about, right, that happen in school. I think it's really important for families to talk to their children about these safety drills that happen in school, just like school would, in ways that focus on safety and being prepared without creating fear or focusing on other aspects of the why, but primarily keeping the focus on safety. And with that, I have this thought in my mind before we move on to wrapping this discussion up. So in our line of work, we are very passionate about taking care of children and families, and safety and child mental health is a priority, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to hear from you, what piqued your interest in talking about this topic today? Because obviously it's controversial, it's difficult, it's not the most uplifting conversation. As you can see, the podcast usually has a lot of joy and energy, but this one, I can't get that energy to make it more kind of lively. Because that's what the topic is. So what piqued your interest?
Well, beyond it being obvious that the topic is important because it helps keep our kids safe, my clinical team does a lot of work in the schools. And each time there's an active shooter drill, we have kids that are presenting with anxiety, depression, worry, inability to focus, perform in class for the following day. And it's important to know that sometimes the fixes need better fixes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we've got to think about these topics with a little more sensitivity and open-mindedness, and not just with the facts that are presented to us, and think about how children are experiencing these solutions.
And I think that the overarching key is the social emotional development of our kids. So if we focused on the social emotional development of our kids, on basic mental wellness, the possibility, probability that these incidents would occur would be greatly reduced, wouldn't it?
That's the hope.
That should be our focus. That's where the passion comes from. We're all in this to keep our kids mentally well. And if a child is struggling, that should come right up to the surface. There should be 99 adults in that school that pick right up on that. And how many adults at home so we can get the kids the help they need so that we're not dealing with school shootings.
Right.
That's great, really. We got to wind it up here because we're running out of time, but this has absolutely been a fascinating discussion. And for anyone listening, remember that it's okay to feel a range of emotions when talking about school shootings, and it's a hot button issue for everybody, and ourselves included. Take care of yourselves and reach out for support if you need it.
And thank you, March, for joining us today. I enjoyed the way in which you thoughtfully brought up a discussion with such nuance without talking about, you know, whether one should own firearms or not, what do we do with guns, keeping the discussion focused on children, safety, healthy conversations, mental well-being for both children and families, because that is what we do as mental health clinicians, and that is who we are. And then these conversations are never easy. So keeping that focus makes it so much more easier even for children to understand. So I greatly appreciate your insights in making this uncomfortable conversation a tad bit comfortable today.
Well, thank you for having me. These are challenging conversations, but it's really important to have them. And could I have the last word? If you see something, say something. And we need to impress that upon our kids.
Thank you. For all our listeners, thank you again for tuning into Mindcast. This is not one of your usual episodes, but our team at Mindcast here feels that we have to hone in on discussions which are important for the mental well-being and health of our children and families. We hope this episode has helped you feel a bit more prepared to talk with your kids about tough topics like this. For more podcasts about children's mental health, please visit bradleyhospital.org/podcast. Thank you, everyone, and take care.